Welcome to Year 3 of the Funding Love Podcast with Mal and Kate. We are two adoptive moms that seek to love, support, and elevate all corners of the adoption triad while running our nonprofit, Funding Love.
In Year 3, we will be talking all about parenting, Disney, adoption, and more with an all-star lineup of incredible guests, both inside and outside the adoption community.
So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a chair.
Because everyone has a seat at our table.
Together, we are Funding Love.
The podcast.
Welcome to episode 108 of the Funding Love podcast with Mal and Kate. And today we have Bruce with us. And I'm just going to say, Mal, we must be on a roll because this is our second survivor in just a matter of weeks that we get to have on the show. I know our listeners remember our episode with Kendra just literally a couple weeks ago. And now we have Bruce, who was on season 44 and season 45. And we're going to talk about that of the show Survivor. Mal and I are huge fans. So
we're geeking out.
We're geeking out. It's so wild that you're here. So welcome, Bruce. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I truly appreciate it. The smile on my face is true. It's real. I love talking to people that geek out about Survivor. I love going to events where people geek out about Survivor because I'm the same exact way. I just went to an event the week before, and literally I saw, you know, Jeremy Collins there. He was there with Val, and I was like a little kid.
I know.
I tell people all the time that it's actually the best show on television. Like,
it is. There's a reason.
It's the best show you can watch on television. Yeah. It's just so good. Every season.
So listen, we have a lot to unpack today. We're going to talk, of course, about Survivor, your personal story of foster care and adoption that you touched on in the show. But before that, tell us where you're joining us from, because I saw your Instagram story this morning that you're somewhere on a beach.
Oh, no.
Or is that an old picture? I was like, oh, he must not be far from me, because that's what I just saw, the same sunrise.
See, I sit here and, you know, I'm in Rhode Island. I'm home. I'm in the cold, cold weather. It was 32 degrees this morning. Wow. Now it's a whopping 39 degrees. Yay. But because of the algorithm that goes on with Instagram and how much I love being on the water and I love the beach and I, you know, the ocean and, you know, it just things like that pop up.
Yeah.
And then when you put it together with a song, so just imagine me, like, you know, I've been awake now laying in bed for 5 minutes and I grab my phone and I go on Instagram, I look and something like that shows up. I'm just like, oh, I can go right back to sleep.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I wish I was on that island. But when it gets warmer out, I promise that a lot of the stuff that I'll be sending will be from my own experiences, from my own camera lens, just to show that like I am on the water and just loving being.
Yeah, that's awesome. So listen, can we have some Survivor chat with you for a little bit before we dive into some real life stuff?
Let's go. Let's make it happen.
Let's do it. So Survivor, you were on season 44 and were medevaced day one. So
that is like
a nightmare situation for, I feel like, anybody who's dying to be on this show. Walk us through like what happened, what was going through your head. Because, you know, the way they edit things, was it truly something that was like you were really concerned about, or was it just something they were taking extreme precaution?
Yeah, it was. Pardon me, my computer was going off. Let me just mute that. What happened was, you know, they were pretty close. They were pretty close to what actually went down because it was such a short period of time, and they wanted to depict my story as much as a story that I gave them. But to kind of go through it all, I literally, you know, I had that shirt. I bought that shirt. I had that shirt ready to go. And I tell people all the time. And if you can't see me right now, I can put my arms up over my head, which is perfect. If you're going to dive under anything, you want your arms to go straight out like Superman. What happened was that shirt was way too tight. Because it was one of those things, like, you know, they planned on me losing weight. Like, that was a given. I am going to lose weight.
Yes.
And what happened was that was early on, so the shirt was snug, so my arms could only go up like this.
Oh my gosh.
So now if you've ever done any kind of anything, you know, rolling around or whatever, like, you know what your arms can do when they're straight out. And my anticipation was to, you know, put my arms out and go underneath the mud, and my arm, I just, everything stopped, and there it is, bang, I hit my head.
Oh
I remember watching the episode and having a guttural like, it looked like that hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. There were so many people. And what people don't realize is we don't see any of this stuff. We don't know what they're going to put on television. So we have no idea. But during the promos they were showing, and I remember pausing it one day, and they showed me carrying the block, right? And I had blood coming down my face. And I'm looking, and I was like, wow, that's so cool. My daughter was like, Dad, like, you have blood in your eye. I'm like, what? So when I had to pause, I looked, and it was like, yes, there was blood in my eye. And that's why I couldn't see. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, that is epic. Yeah. Like, that is amazing.
You were just probably running on adrenaline.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you anticipate being on this show. So I was cast to be on season 41. The pandemic hit, and then they scrapped me. They put me in the back burner. So then I got a chance to go on 44.
Wow.
So that was back in 2019. So now this is years that have gone by, and like you go up, you have your ups and your downs. And then all of a sudden, like, now I'm on a complete up. I'm on a high. Like, this is great. You know, you wait for Jeff to be like, Survivor's ready, and then go, you know, like, just wait for that. And when you get it, it's like, and I'm running down the beach, and I'm like catching up to everybody who's in front of me because we were staggered, and I'm catching up. It's 46, and I'm catching up to these young kids, like, here I come. And all of a sudden, bang, now I'm slower than everybody.
I also have to say, like, we need to remind the viewers and the listeners on the podcast that you were also a Navy SEAL, correct?
Mm-hmm.
No. I tell people all the time, because people ask me this question.
Okay.
I am giving my utmost respect to Navy SEALs. I was not a Navy SEAL. I was an enlisted Navy sailor. I was in the Navy, but I was not a Navy SEAL. Katora said that, and like, not everyone, but Katora said it. And people ran with it. I was not a Navy SEAL. That would be the highest honor to be a Navy SEAL. If I don't think I'd be able to make it through that, but I would try my damnedest to go through their training. Yeah. But they're the elite. Like, I would never consider myself the elite, and nor would I ever turn around and say, "Yeah, I was a Navy SEAL," and not be, because then I'd expect to get beat up by every Navy person that I know.
So. Oh my goodness, it's so crazy. Then how just like one little blip on television can.
Yeah.
I can run with that. But I think either way, like watching your determination right out of the gate, like you said, when he's like, Survivor's ready, go. Like, I think had you not hit your head, you were already showing like how much you were giving to this game and how much of a threat you would have been either way. Because you are a strong player in my mind.
Yeah, it's I appreciate that. I really do. You know, playing this game that I love, I always looked at it. I was a physical person. I'm always going to be a physical person. I've been coaching for years and years and years since, you know, my son's 17 now. I started coaching him when he was 4. Like, that has been my thing. And I could never sit there and look at a young person that I'm coaching and be like, oh, do this without being able to show them or having them compete against each other and me not jump in and be like, yo, beat Coach Bruce, you get a practice off. Beat Coach Bruce and you don't have to run at the end of practice. Like, you know, and it brings things out of them. But then also, you know, it makes me want to, you know, compete. But then that's with the kids. When I play basketball with my friends or play golf with my friends, like I want to beat them badly. and that's the thing. It's the competition side of it that I just absolutely love.
Mm.
You know, and that's, I brought that for 45 as well.
Yeah, you did. And that's one thing I want to ask is, so 44, you're medevaced. I can't imagine they'd send you home, right? So were you still there on the island? And then how long until you knew you were going to be a part of 45 cast?
Right.
So when I Jeff came to the beach that night, the sun had literally just gone down. Jeff came to the beach and, you know, they made the decision to send me home. And just so the people are aware is that I didn't want to go. Not at all. Not in any stretch of the imagination. But when they started talking about
it. And we feel that for you. Like when we're watching, we're like, oh my gosh. Like,
my ugly cry. You enjoy my ugly cry?
Well, no, we're all ugly crying with you. It's terrible.
So when they medevaced me off, like they put me in the stretcher, they took me away. So it was a boat ride to the helicopter pad, and from the helicopter pad, a 2.5 hour ambulance ride to the hospital. Reason why I took an ambulance ride is because it was started to rain out, and the helicopter pilot wasn't comfortable in flying in the rain.
Okay.
I got you, man. Like, I appreciate that. So what had happened was I had gone to the hospital. They did all the scans and everything like that, and everything came back fine. You know, a major concussion, and you know, I was okay. They gave me the option to go home. They said, "Bruce, do you want to go home?" They, you know, they called my wife. They talked to her, let her know what was going on. You know, I spoke to my wife. I spoke to her twice. But prior to all that, before I even went out, the only way that I would have came home would have been if something had happened to my wife and my kids. That's the only way that I would have came home. But something happened to me. But being told that I'm fine, now I don't need to go home at all. There's no need. So I stayed there. But they put me in a quarantine. And the quarantine that they put me in, that was like for 3 days. But it was good because I was in a quarantine and also getting over the, well, minimizing the concussion syndromes, the nausea, the sensitivity to light and stuff like that. So I was on campus. I was actually at Ponderosa for that entire time.
Wow. And then they asked, was it shortly thereafter they said, "Hey, we want you to be a part of this next season?" Or because that feels like how cool is that? That you, I mean, so this just kind of leads into my next question too, because you just told us how much you did not want to go home. And us as super fans, we asked Kendra the same question. We're sitting on the couch watching this unfold. So we have not the same perspective at all, but we're also watching other, you know, people, they're quitting. There's two other castaways were like, "Oh no, they're just," and then us who are super fans who would die to be there. And then knowing you just got medevaced, you're like, you know, the season before, you're like, "What the heck?" You know, I can't imagine your mindset there. But all that being said, we don't have the same perspective. So I don't know what everyone's been through, but I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
I love Hannah. I love Sean.
Oh yeah.
They're always going to be a part of the survivor community, the survivor family. I don't agree with the way that they both went out and the reasonings. But that's on them. That's their own personal thing. You know, I remember in going back to 44 and seeing myself hit my head, and knowing that I was not going home. I finished what I was doing. And then my body was like, "Bruce, hey, time out." And then, you know, kind of fade away into whatever. I didn't even know, to go back to the original question, I didn't even know that I was going to be invited back. Mm-hmm. When I was being medevaced off of the beach, Jeff was having conversations about how to get me back on the show at that point in time. Now, so see, the premiere for 44 comes. I have a big party. There's like 100 and I think it was like 125 to like 130 people that I invited that were there. It was great. It was in a huge place, but the place was also open to the public. And there were like another 70 people that were there or so that were just kind of nonchalantly watching. And then all of a sudden, everybody's watching.
Yeah.
Because it's piped through all the speakers and I'm having an emotional breakdown. Nobody can see me. I'm like in the middle of the floor. Everybody's looking at all the TVs that are against the walls. No one can see me. And then this all happens. And it was a gigantic sigh of relief. I jumped up on the table like once the episode was over and I'm like, "Hey, everybody, thank you very much. You know, my survivor career," I took a bow and that was it. So now, unbeknownst to me, Jeff has his podcast and he officially invites me back. I didn't know.
Oh, wow.
So now that's at like 10, 15, 10, 20. Episode ended at 10 o'clock and I'm having a good time with friends, you know, let it out. My phone's going off my pocket. I'm like, just probably just well wishers and things like that.
People, sure.
You know, I'll get back to them later. So, and I tell people this, I left where I was and I came home. My wife left at 12:15. I left around 12:30 and I got home not too far after that. And she's in bed and she's reading through like all the well wishes and stuff like that. She's like, "Oh my God, people are so nice." I'm like, "Oh, isn't that awesome?" And then I'm like, I lay down in bed. I'm like, "Let me check my phone." And I start looking at my messages from my friends and like, "Oh my God, this is great. I can't believe it. Good job, Bruce. Oh my God." All of a sudden, click this. So I clicked the link and it went straight to the podcast. And that's what I found out.
Wow.
That's when I found out that I was going to be on the show. And then I got I had a phone call with Jeff and the casting people the next day.
Wow. You know,
any of the four seasons you want to go on, man, the next four, you can go on. Like you just
pick. Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, so I made a decision to go right away. Yeah. And I kind of wish I would have waited.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, listen, hindsight,
hindsight 2020, you know?
Yeah.
It is.
It's just, there was so much smoke when I got out there. Like, everybody, yeah. like, when people saw me, they're like.
Right off the bat, Emily, right in the beginning, coming for
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I would never fault her for it. She spoke her mind, and I appreciate her for that.
Oh, no, she's one of the kind. Yeah, no, I love, oh, I love her on the show. Too. So I'm curious because we, you know, this is the best social experiment I think that exists still, but I want to know what the hardest part was for you. Was it the social, the sleep, the hunger, the physical, missing home? I mean, there's so many parts of the show. What would you say is where you felt the most hung up, if at all?
What people don't, well, I've said this already at this point, but probably some of the listeners don't know this, is that what people didn't realize or didn't know, nobody knew. My mother had passed away a month after, actually, I'm sorry, 8 days after the premiere for 44. And then it was a month before I had left. Mm-hmm. So you're still kind of in that, well, not kind of, still in that grieving process and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But you try as hard as possible to, you know, just motor through and be thankful for the things you have each day. And when I say my mother, I mean my adopted mother.
Yeah.
So whenever I say mom, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So at night, see, during the day, I was fine. You know, mm-hmm. every now and again, I got caught up in stuff, but it was internalized. At night is when I was able to actually do my own thing, be myself, be Bruce, like mm-hmm. emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would sit there on the beach of Fiji. I would sleep on the beach. I slept on the beach every single night.
Wow.
And I would look up at, you know, the stars, or if there were clouds, I'd look up at the clouds, and I would, you know, I talk to the family, I talk to mom and stuff like that. And that's when I actually have my ability to have like an emotional freeing moment by myself.
Mm-hmm.
During the day, it was gameplay. It's mm-hmm. all about game. I didn't want, like, and I talked, we had normal conversations, and I talked about the kids and stuff like that, like normal conversation, but it was gameplay. So you tried to find other things, other cracks in people, and understanding what exactly it is they were trying to get out of you via their conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my biggest hang up. And I say that to say this is like, I don't think that, like me personally, the challenges were the challenges. They were great and I loved them. And if I could compete in them, like holding onto that pole, like that, I was out. Like I couldn't do it. I at that time weighed like 175 pounds and, you know, I had muscle mass that was heavy, and it's tough for me to be able to do anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there were other things, other parts of it, you know, that was in the individual side, like the group stuff, the team things. When we got together and ran our challenges, it was very easy to zone everything in and say, what can you do? Well, I'll throw a human being. Like I'm good with that. Whatever you need me to do physically, I'll do. And that's why, you know, Kelly and Brando, they were on the puzzles, like those type of things. So mm-hmm. my hang up was not with that. My hang up was not, one of the things I did have a little bit of a hang up with was, and I say it in a different way so people don't come at me, not gonna care if they would. But the gap between myself and other people age-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. it was tough for me to be able to speak to them or think that I was speaking to them and have them not look at it like I'm being their dad.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. I tried as hard as humanly possible. And I felt that I did a very good job 90% of the time. The other 10% just weighed in so heavy. The 10% was like 100. And,
yeah.
you know, that was, we all know what that was stemming from. Literally, you know, it was kind of mind boggling how that was brought to me being aggressive. It really wasn't. It was just me asking normal questions mm-hmm. in a way that I'm not following it up with, are you okay with me asking that question?
Right.
No, at different generations, I'm telling you, people take things differently. I can't imagine how hard for you that was to kind of, all right, I'm just communicating. Am I doing it wrong? You know, like it's just it's crazy when it's different mm-hmm. people out there. But I do want to like go back because the fact that you had that time alone on the beach shows how human that like you guys still are out there, because it is mm-hmm. a game, and it's so hard to like step away and like feel without feeling like it's weakness or somebody viewing it as weakness.
Right.
So I loved that you had that time at night by yourself to still let those emotions start and play out.
Yeah.
So you could be gameplay Bruce throughout the day. Because I mean, I can't imagine having to balance all of that. I mean, that's losing your mother is nothing small. So that's I love that you did that for yourself because you're still a human and you have to do all that. But listen, going back to like the conversation, like with Keturah and all of the, let's quote unquote, younger survivors that were on the show. Do you think your, because we talked to Kendra on her episode about, she told us a whole part of her gameplay was cut out. It was not part of the edit that made the final show. I'm curious how you feel. Do you think your edit was fair? That's what I'm kind of get to. Do you think who you are was represented fair on the show? Because, you know, Kendra was sharing her experience.
I, for the most part, at the beginning, yes. You know, Bruce dancing on the boat, like those type of things. That's what I do all the time. I tell people, like, I literally will wake up and my wife is like, stop. Like, I can't stop. Like, I will get up. I'll put music on. I'll start dancing around the house. You know, my son will come out of his room. Yeah, I'll do the robot. I'll do whatever. Like, I'll make stuff up in my living room. And if you ever just drove by the front of my house, like, I have a nice big window. If you ever drove by the front of my house, like, at night even, and it's dark out, but the lights are on in this house so you can see in the window, you will see me dancing. Like, that's I do. So me taking a look, even, like, my son said something to me the first episode when we got to the beach, and I'm looking around, like, you know, kind of seeing what's going on. Like, that's me assessing everything and bringing it all in and being like, okay, so how are we going to have the most fun possible on this beach? Like, and I'm looking at all the amount of land that we have to do things. And I'm skipping through, like, the, you know, the paths that we have. I'm skipping through them. Like,
that's awesome.
Like, I'm having a good time. So the edit showed that for the first episode or two, possibly to the third. And then it started making a little bit of a turn. Now, mind you, I can't dance around and give all that energy out at that point in time. So I don't have anything going in my body. So I took an example. We joked and we had fun and we laughed the pretty much majority of the time.
Yeah.
And then the scheming and plotting and all that other stuff, that just naturally took place. But as far as for the edit for me, I think that the dynamic and throwing Keturah on top of that, how much she couldn't stand me. And, you know, for as many episodes as I was on the show, like, she literally, every single episode was about,
me. It was all about you. I know.
It was. Yeah.
So what that does is that in turn, like, if like, we're all humans. So if you sit there and you're at work and you're in your cubicle and you got five people in the cubicle and two people are like, oh my God, I can't stand this job. I can't stand this job. I can't stand this job. Then you're going to be like, well, you know what? I can't stand this job either. That's what happens.
Negativity really does, like, breathe so quickly.
So who was your person on the show? Did you have somebody that you felt like was your number one most of the way through your time there?
Gameplay was Kelly, you know, and I entrusted her because she, you know, she, I don't think she downplays it too much, but I think she a little bit, she's a very strong woman. And my mother was a very strong woman. So I gravitate towards strong women. So it's kind of like a compliment to her. You know, the reason why I wanted her as my number one and looked at her like that. And, you know, if it was reciprocated back, my thoughts were that it was, and then come to find out it was a hindrance, but whatever. But as far as the number one, like, so there's the gameplay and then there's the emotional. Jake is my number one because Jake is from, like, he literally is 45 minutes from me. Like, I was with him 2 weeks ago and actually less than that, a week and a half ago. And if I call him up, he's like, what's up, old man? And I'm like, you know, if I don't like to say this, but I'm like, what's up, little shit? Like, this is, and then we go back and forth and we have these great conversations and then it's just about nonsense and nothing. Like,
yeah. He seems like a really, like, really genuinely sweet guy. He really did. Like, and there was so much vulnerability that you could see from him that felt so relatable. I really enjoyed watching him play. I really did. That's awesome. No, and now, Emily, I feel like there was a transformation in y'all's relationship from the beginning, episode one on the boat there, where I love Emily spoke her mind. And then y'all ended up working together for a little bit, at least scheming for a moment. Did you not?
Yes, we did. Yes. Yeah. You know, but let's go back to what we were talking about earlier. damn it, Hannah. Had everything worked out and Hannah didn't quit, Emily would have been sent home first. That's just the way the tide was going. And it's a butterfly effect, you know, and then who knows what could have happened. But I know that if they stayed the way that they were, physically they would have been Lulu. They would have lost their challenges. Like, we wouldn't have lost to them.
Yeah.
Very confident about that. But even on a tribe swap, and now, you know, Hannah's where Emily is, and that whole dynamic, I think everything would have stayed the same. But even in Ponderosa, like with Hannah, I could kind of see a level where I could work with her because of her, like, she was wide open, like, her eyes were wide open in regards to the experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like everybody was, but hers were a little bit more, like, wide open. Because coming to find out, she was a newer person to Survivor. So that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah.
Like, the super fan nowadays, they look at Survivor like, oh, yeah, so this is it, huh? This is how it works. And then they call back to other people that have played the game.
Yes.
So, you know, like a Hannah would have been easier to mold and work with. As Emily was to Caleb, you know, Emily was fairly new. She Gabler was the reason why she put her tape in, and there you are.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So cool.
Yeah, it is seeming like even the episode that was on this week, like, being a super fan is starting to become a threat in the game. Like, the more you know, and the less people trust you, because they know that you know all the secrets and all the strategies and what
you're playing. You have a toolbox of things.
Yes, you know? Yeah. So it's interesting.
There are a lot of times I get asked questions about Survivor, and I, you know, you're a little coy, just for the fact that if I'm on a podcast and somebody says something like, "What's your favorite favorite season?" I don't know. If I ever play again, they're gonna be like, "Oh, Bruce is a little bit smarter than we thought he was. Like, he remembers X, Y, and Z." Like, come on, man.
Yeah. So, would you go back? Would you go back if Jeff called you and was like, "Hey, we want to do another season and bring back Crazy Uncle Bruce"? Yeah. Would you go?
Hi, Jeff. Yep, I'm on the plane right now. All right, see you soon. Like that.
Love to hear.
I would play in a heartbeat, but I really truly do think that, I'm 47. I'll be 48 in August, and that's not old by any stretch of the imagination. This is my own little thing in my back of my own mind. If they call me and said, "Bruce, we want you to come back and play again," I would say yes, like that.
That's easy. Awesome.
But I think that they're, from the edit that they showed, if they're going off of that, I would not be invited back. If they go off of the raw footage to see what it is that I actually did, they would have me back. I'd be on the upper tier of, or the first page of some, 25 people coming back, just because, the motivation that I had, towards the game, towards the people, the way that we worked together, they didn't show it, but literally when we got the flint, Brando broke the flint.
Oh,
he broke the flint, and they're trying as hard as they can to get the fire going. And then they're like, "Bruce, try it out." And I'm just like, and tied the flint back up together, shaved. Click, click, boom, fire was there, and we were warm within 5 minutes. It was like those type of things from being the age that I am, the experience. I've never really used flint. Like, I've done it in my backyard a couple of times, but it's like just the concept of it, like, makes the most sense. So long story short, yes, I would go back and play again in a heartbeat.
No, I feel like I feel like even the edit that they had, like, that we saw, where you were a bit of a polarizing person, right? Like, I feel like you were a little bit of a free agent, but I feel like you were so good for the show. I feel like you were so good. I would love to watch you again. And I'm truly just saying that. I feel like you were a character that some weeks you're like, "Oh man, we're rooting for Bruce." And some weeks we're like, "No." I mean, it's just because of the edit, the way they make you feel about a certain person. But I would love to see you again on the show. Mm-hmm. It'd be so fun.
Me too.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So let me ask one more thing before we dive into some adoption talk. What did this experience mean to you? If you could wrap it up in a few sentences, what would you say this Survivor experience meant to you?
The Survivor experience meant the world to me. The reason why it meant the world to me is because, I come from a very large family due to foster care and adoption. And I've survived a lot of stuff in my life because of foster care and adoption, and I've things that have been brought on, and that I've released from my life or whatever have you. So it kind of sets me up to be a Survivor player.
Mm-hmm.
And people talk about that all the time, like, "I survived this, I survived that." And yes, you have your own way to explain it, and in your own experience. But my experience with the amount of people that I've seen in my life, the relationships that I've made, the relationships that I've cut off, like that. And then also the competition, like when you're in the foster care, like there's competition, like there's mm-hmm. no getting around it. You know, whether it be for affection or emotion or whatever, mm-hmm. you're always battling for something. So that's why this is such a huge part of my life. And I'm just so happy to have had a part of it so far.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that. So just like you kind of teased again, tell us, if you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit of your story when it comes to foster care and adoption. You teased, you gave a little bit on the show, but if you wouldn't mind, I'd love you to share that.
So when I was born as a child, I'm not going to kind of go through every phase, but
yeah.
I was actually a part of a normal, per se, quote unquote, household. Mm-hmm. You know, my biological father was there. My biological mother was there. It was me, my two brothers. You know, we lived in an apartment, like everything was perfectly fine. And then my biological parents split up and things start going downhill. I'm with my biological mother. And just the world starts unraveling. And now at the age of two, myself and my brother, who has autism, we were both abandoned, and we were like locked in the bedroom, and our biological mother took off and left. And we were there for a couple of, I want to say a couple of days, but I think it was from a report that I actually read, because back in the day when the newspaper used to go twice a day, there was an article of two, you know, African-American boys locked in a bedroom with feces on the, you know, the floor and on the bedding and this and the other. So we were there for a period of time. Mm-hmm. So that put me into the foster care system. Mm-hmm. So, but it separated me and my brother. So I have another brother who was with our biological father. And that's the turmoil that where it all started, the whole survivor mentality, if you will. Even at the age of two, you know, I'm a young black man, and I'm a baby, I should say, and I'm going into a house mm-hmm. of all white folks. Like mm-hmm. this is a completely different shift. And, you know, I would assume at that age, because I don't really remember any of it. But I assume at that age, it's like, okay, you are in a little bit of a, what's going on? What's this?
Absolutely. That type, yes.
Type scenario. And then my parents, you know, Teresa and Gerard, they fostered for 20 years, and we had about 122 kids in and out of the house wow. throughout that course of time. And they ended up adopting, they adopted seven kids. They had six of their own biological children. And then my brother Bruce, who recently passed away, my brother Bruce, he was a foster child. He was actually their first foster child, and he was never adopted. So we always had people in our house. There were always people there. When I was talking about the surviving thing, like yeah. you had to survive for dinner because someone was coming to get you food if you weren't fast enough to eat it, you know?
Wow. Yes. Wow. You definitely grew up in an environment that was a lot of stimuli, it sounds like.
Yeah,
but yeah. but you were adopted at the age of seven, officially.
At the age of seven.
Yeah, and what about your biological brothers? Were they with you?
No. So once we were separated, my brother with autism, John Dell, he had gone to state care. Mm. So now you got to remember, now this is back in 1978, 79. Mm-hmm. Things were a little, you know. Archaic. So everybody got separated. So Jermaine and then my brother Jermaine, he ended up going with our biological father because our biological mother said that I was not our biological father's son. So it was kind of a back and forth type thing. So I went into foster care and everybody else kind of went their way.
Wow.
Come to find out, my brother John Dell had gone to a halfway house in Maine for a period of time because of his autism.
Yeah.
And then they opened a facility here in Rhode Island. So they moved him back. But I didn't know. I didn't know any of this. Obviously being as young as I was.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, thank you for sharing that. I mean, you touched on this right before I even asked this question, but resilience, like, is the word that comes to mind for you and your story, which mm-hmm. I feel like makes you so perfect for the game of Survivor. Like now knowing, like, truly hearing that story, not to belittle your story, but I do feel like those are character building things that sets you up to, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to keep going. You know, like you hit your head, you have a concussion. What are you talking about? I'm not going home. You know what I mean? Like those things are your story as a child just built that character in you. And I mean, I would imagine you would agree that your experience as a child helped you in that game.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's life in general. You know, when you take a look at the people that are wanting to quit this game, you know, they've not had, and this is, they've had their own level of hard life. Mm-hmm. But when you have 10 years of a hard life, or you have 25 years of a hard life,
yeah,
25 years kind of maybe will help you kind of, you know, shoulder a little bit more.
Sure.
And then please understand, I'm not taking away from anybody's experience, because a hard life is determined by the person that's going through that hard life. Me personally, the way that I look at it, every single day that I wake up, I'm smiling about something. It's just silly. Like, I call it my chemical imbalance. Like, I'm constantly smiling about something. And with my, you know, my experience, even if something's hard, like, I always say, well, shoot, this could have been much worse. This could have been a completely different scenario had I not gone into foster care, had I not been adopted. You know, I have biological family that I'm coming to find out that I've been killed here in the streets of Providence in Rhode Island. Like, you don't think of, you know, murder in Rhode Island. We have 9, you know, homicides a year, if you will, in our major city. So that's not a lot. But over the years, I've had family members that have died from violence. Mm-hmm. You know, so like I said, it could be different. Life could be so different. And that's why I look at it every day as a blessing, because I was taken from that environment and placed in a completely different environment that I'm thankful for, grateful for. And, you know, now I was able to mold in my own way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, your parents must have been incredible people. You talked about your mom being so strong, fostering so many children and adopting so many as well. I can only imagine, like, that would take an incredible amount of strength just in the parenting journey there.
Well, some people look at it like, okay, so, you know, people are there, 120 kids in and out of the house. Like, it's weird. Like, what's going on with them? Now, mind you, it was a job. Like, my parents were foster parents. It was a job that they were willing to do, and taking care of somebody else's child while they're in, knowing that their situation was dire. So that's why they had to be removed. But that doesn't take away the fact that a child could be in our house for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And when that child would leave, I would look at my mother and she'd be, you know, there's a piece, always a piece. I was like, of her heart that went with
it. Yes. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Trying not to get emotional thinking about it. But that happened on a regular basis. It was a regular basis that, you know, we would have kids in the house for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And those are the nightmare scenarios for her, because these kids, she now loves them. Like, it's not an occupational hazard to love a child. It's just, this is something that happens. You just love something you're with. Yeah. And she went through that a lot. And, you know, my dad is, you know, the stubborn Frenchman. and one of the things with him was that, you know, he would never show that emotion, but he would always, you know, wonder how that kid's doing.
Yeah.
You know, just to harken back to his experiences with the kids. Cause my mom was home. She was a stay-at-home mom, you know, per se. She was, you know, cause she was getting, you know, it was her job to be a foster parent. My father went to work every day. So mm-hmm. she was with us all the time. When we leave for school and come home from school, she was there. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I hear people use that, honestly, it's kind of sad, as an excuse to not do foster care. They'll say, oh, I feel called to foster care, but I just don't think I could ever do it because I would just get too attached, is what they say. I'd get too attached. And the goal of foster care is reunification. Like, we want to believe in the biological family unit. We want to root for them and hope that we can, you know, that they can be reunified with their children, but there's just times when that's not possible. But I hate that that's used as an excuse, because just like your mom, it's like, it's something that's so worth it. Yeah, you might get attached, but I think that's a good thing, not a negative thing. I think it's healthy to love a child for a season and to be able to want what's best for them. And then to also, like, let them have that path if that's what is meant for them. And to just know that in that season, you loved them, and you'll love them forever. But yeah, I think I hate that people use that as an excuse to not get involved in the foster care system, because I think that every child deserves to be loved, even if it's just for a season, you know?
Yeah. And that is exactly correct, because you don't know what they, what got them to that scenario. It was kids. You know, my mom, she knew, she had the case file. She knew what was going on and why they were there. Cause she's got to be able to, you know that emotionally this child might be completely withdrawn. Mm-hmm. But then also know that when these kids came to the house, we're all kids. We don't care. We're all like, this is our own now family. If you think about it, because that's another thing that drives me back to Survivor, is that you have these people coming into your life that you would have never met for any other scenario. You mm-hmm. probably never met them, but now you're being foster care made us come together. Survivor made me come together with these people that my castaways from season 44 and 45. So I can call all of them and say, hey, how you doing? How's everything going? And then we can just kind of reconnect and just start talking again at any moment in time.
Yeah. It's having that common ground, I guess, something that really unites you with that. It's like an unspoken common ground that you have with all of the kids in your house and with all of your castaways on the seasons. It's kind of like you can understand each other in a level that others can't. I love that. So one fun little off the cuff question, because I've been wondering this, and I know we have some other friends who are Survivor fans who are wondering. On the show, we noticed you had a tattoo. And we're like, because you only told a small part of your story on the show. So we're like, is that a adoption triad triangle? What is that you had on you? So I'm curious, does that mean anything, or were we just overanalyzing?
Oh, no, you weren't overanalyzing. And I appreciate you seeing that. No, it's the international sign for adoption. So it's a heart interwoven with a triangle. Mm-hmm. Now, my tattoo artist is a very good friend of mine. And I've known him since I was a kid. He actually... I remind him all the time. Remember when you used to defend me when I would act like an idiot and everybody wanted to beat me up and you just, you know, jump in and be my bodyguard? So originally what I have on this shoulder, which is a tribal tattoo. And it was the thing to do back in the day when I was in the Navy. So one day I wanted to put that together because it was right after my father had passed away. And, you know, mm-hmm. he was an integral part of my life, even though he and I had our own struggles, like every father and son to a certain degree have. I wanted to honor him and my mother in some way. And that was the way to be able to do it. So I got the international sign for adoption and I gave it to him. It was on a pretty piece of paper. And I said, here. Do something with this. And what he did was he came and I did say I wanted to blend together with my shoulder. And he's like, why? The reasoning behind it is the tattoo that's on my shoulder is a tribe. That's how I started my life. I started my life with my last name used to be Bright, B-R-I-G-H-T. So I started my life with the Bright family as a tribe. And then foster care came. And as it comes up to the side, it starts breaking up. Mm-hmm. And then adoption happens. So it breaks up. It's all rocky in the middle. And then boom, you have that tattoo. But if you really got a chance to see the tattoo, which I don't, you know, they didn't really show it that much on TV. It's like granite. It's like stone.
Yeah.
And stone has cracks in it. And, you know, there's imperfections in regards to it. So that's what is the adoption time. Cause like I said, he's known me for pretty much all of my life. And he knows the trials and tribulations that I've gone through in being adopted. And that he came back with that depiction. I'm like, you put that on me right now. So it just made sense. So that's what that tattoo is for.
Wow, yeah, I love it. That. Yeah, we noticed that. We all came together. Did you see that? Did you see that? I saw that. We're trying to piece it together. No, thanks for sharing that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So one last thing, if you could give words of encouragement to maybe somebody who has a similar story, who still in foster care or was in foster care, is trying to make sense of their story. What words of encouragement would you give to them to help them through?
You know, it's everybody's different. Mistakes were made to get you to that scenario. Internally, for ourselves, the words of encouragement that I would give is every single day is a blessing. Whether you're in foster care or you get reunited with your family, or if you never get reunited with the family and you just have to find your own path, it's a blessing. No one's going to be able to sit there and tell you exactly what it is, the roadmap that's going to work, because everybody's road forks differently in multiple times in multiple places. So I would just say, wake up every day, find the gratitude, smile, and just be thankful for the day that you have, no matter what the situation. Find that light and just run with it. Just run with it. Like make it the best day ever. Just there's so much more than my mind's going so fast, my mouth is not moving fast enough. But it's just enjoy this thing because we don't have it for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. You know, and as soon as you when people realize that, like, we don't realize it till we're an adult, till we're older. Like, wow, like 5 years ago I was here.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to hold a class with 12 and 13 year olds and be like, hey, let me tell you something. What you're experiencing right now, this is not even life. This is just a training session. So use this training session because life is going to come soon and then you're going to grow up on that. Like, and that's the words of encouragement and a long drawn out thing that I would say.
No, I love your optimism. I love your, that you really are like a light. Mm-hmm. I love your smile and the way that you love to dance and find the optimism in life. I think that's great advice. Cause I think, like you said earlier in Survivor, like negativity breeds like wildfire. Like it, like one little spark can cause a wildfire. You really have to fight that every day. I think everybody, regardless of your story, it's like waking up and fighting against like the negativity and darkness of this world and being able to find the positive, find something to smile about and maybe just do a little dance in your living room. I think that that's like some of the best advice. Like, would we all not just be happier people? And like, if we didn't just like take that.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. There's something to be grateful for every day. We can find it. You can find something to be grateful for.
Just one of the weirdest things that I hold. I watch movies all the time. There's a movie called Garden State.
It was Yes.
So do you remember when Natalie Portman had said to Zach Braff, like, yes. I've done that before. Like, it's that one thing. Just find that one thing and pray to God that someone's watching. Because when you do that one dumb thing, you see that person and they look at you and you both start laughing. Oh, man, there's no better feeling because it's like it's empowering that first of all, you made someone else laugh. You're now outside of your own skin. And it's like, OK, life is good. This is good.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, life is good. I'm got to say I'm impressed by you and the joy that you have. I mean, I'm so grateful that we've had this conversation. I mean, I feel inspired by you. So thank you for joining us.
Yes.
True. This has been so fun. And I'm going to cross my fingers and say a prayer as well that you end up back on that show. And maybe with me. Maybe I'll be in that show with you and we'll be castaways together or something. I don't know. It's a dream of mine. We'll see if I get there.
We will follow the rules and we will not speak beforehand and get an alliance going.
No, we will not. There won't be anything. I don't even know who Crazy Uncle Bruce is, so we'll meet for the first time. All right. Hey, Bruce, this has been fun. Thank you again for joining us, and hope to see you soon.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to this episode of the Funding Love Podcast. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Funding Love Podcast. We are a crowdfunded nonprofit, which means that people like you can help make a lasting impact in the lives of adoptive families and birth moms. At Funding Love, we create post-adoption experiences that strengthen bonds, build community, and restore people. And when you partner with us, whether that is giving online, signing up to become a monthly donor, or simply buying merchandise from our shop, you are Funding Love.